Welcome back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubs at the Club, the Idaho Vandals affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dallas Hammer, joined by Brian Marceau. Brian, how are you doing?
Dude, doing great. Talking, look, we have Vandal football kind of to talk about, update. I first got into recording on Tubs at the Club for basketball season, and it's our first basketball episode, so it's going well in Coeur d'Alene.
Hell yeah. We also have the spiciest and hottest producer in the land. If you're watching live, he doesn't even have his camera on because he's too hot to turn that damn thing on. It's Martin.
No, I could not be wearing anything right now for all you know.
Hashtag only
touch. But it's going great. Good to be back beyond. It's getting cold as absolute fucking shit in Moscow right now. But it's nice to be
close on. How's it supposed to feel?
I got a space heater right next to me. Let's go. I like the cold. But yeah, it's good to be back on, and it's going to be talking some women's basketball again too.
Yeah. Again, we're going to get into Vandal hoops, guys, but first let's break into Around the Bar, brought to us by Hughes River Expedition. What we're going to talk about, guys, a little bit of Vandal football coaching news, two huge stories. One, maybe not so huge. Capone Royce-Wega, the Vandals defensive ends coach, unfortunately no contract renewal for him. Idaho going to be looking for a new edge rusher position coach. Brian, your immediate reaction to hearing that Royce-Wega's contract not renewed and Idaho in the market for a new pass rushing coach?
Well, hey, if contract's not renewed, that means coaching staff felt like they needed to move on. So whatever, turnover does happen coaching staffs. I mean, we talked last year about how, hey, Montana needed to have some turnover, help them. But I guess I think the bigger deal here is like, hey, you're right, we're going to have a new edge coach. Well, the dude's going to have a new boss. That's the big news, is that we know who the defensive coordinator is. And if you are a hashtag only Tubbs, patreon.com/tubsintheclub member, you have known for quite a while that Dan Jackson, from most recently defensive backs coach at Vanderbilt, was going to be the new defensive coordinator replacing Rob Orich. And look, Dallas, you've done more research here than I have, so take it away, dude. Dan Jackson, I know, like, hey, dude comes from Vanderbilt, he's got some more background with Eck. I'm stoked, but hey, tell us why we should be.
Yeah, I'm honestly thrilled about this hire, Brian. So if you go back and look, there's a press release up on govandals.com right now. You can read all about Dan Jackson and his career, and, you know, kind of the PR spin of this is how the guy's career has gone. And it gives a lot of good information there. But for the nuts and bolts of it, 2012, he started as a South Dakota State grad assistant, did that for 2 years. In 2014, he was named their defensive backs coach and their recruiting coordinator, did that through 2018. In 2019, he was promoted to assistant head coach / special teams coordinator / recruiting coordinator / cornerback. So they changed it from DBs to corners. Took a whole bunch of tasks on there in 2019 with SDSU. Then he moves to the group of five, goes to NIU, Northern Illinois, which is where former Vandal CJ Jordan is currently going to be competing for the starting quarterback position there. He's the cornerbacks coach and co-special teams coordinator there. Second year at NIU, he also takes on the title of pass defensive coordinator. So slowly moving his way up the ranks until the last two seasons, he's been at Vanderbilt as their defensive backs coach. And the big thing for me here is this guy, everywhere he's gone, it's been turnovers everywhere. The one thing Idaho's defense struggled with last year was turnovers. I thought Idaho's defense on the whole, I think, played better than they had the year before. And I think most people would say that. And Brian, we've talked about it, that Idaho's defense was kind of what led Idaho through the back half of the season last year. But when you look at the places he's been and the numbers that have gone on, NIU was winless in 2020. He shows up in 2021. Obviously it's not just because of him, but they go 9-5. They win their conference for the first time in forever. Get a whole bunch of turnovers there. When he was at South Dakota State, they think they led the FCS or came in second 1 year with 20 plus interceptions. Just you look at where he's been and what his teams have historically done, and it has been those DBs pick the ball off. It's the one thing we didn't see a whole lot of last year. Really, really excited to see what's going to happen. Obviously, the secondary has to be retooled, and we'll end up, I'm sure, talking about that as the season goes on. But Brian, I right now I am thrilled to see, again, guy with SEC experience, guy with coordinating background all over the place coming in here to again, very familiar with Eck, coming in here to kind of build this program in the way Eck has been envisioning it. A guy who's been at, again, South Dakota State with Eck for almost 5 years there. Feels like a pretty good selection to me, Brian.
Yeah, and he has – so Jackson has some background that reminds me, honestly, of Rob Orich, in that Orich had been a defensive coordinator for like 1 year prior to coming to Idaho at Bemidji State. When he came from South Dakota, University of South Dakota, he was a special teams coordinator there. So he Idaho was Orich's first D1 coordinator position. Well, hey, Dan Jackson was co-special teams coordinator at Vanderbilt. So similar, hold on, I apologize. At Northern Illinois, he was co-special teams coordinator and past defensive coordinator. So, hey, that part itself is similar. But you hit on a ton of things already. The thing I want to piggyback here is, one, we know Jackson's linebackers coach too. So that means there isn't any more reshuffling in the defensive coaches beyond. We know Aswega has to be – the person is going to be hired to replace Aswega. But that means Bobby J is still at safeties coach right now, which Bobby J was a name that I was curious about whether he'd be promoted, because he had been a defensive coordinator at San Diego prior to coming to Idaho. Stanley Frank still on staff, still the DBs coach. So the secondary position coaches are still the same, but like you said, we have a guy who, where he's coached, the team's been great at turning the ball over. I know Eck had said previously that with the coaching turnover and, some players transferring out, that he didn't want to have to completely blow up the defensive scheme. So, hey, he keeps continuity in the secondary, brings in a guy that Eck clearly is comfortable with because of the South Dakota State background. And the fact that Jackson, I think that one of the things that the coaching staff lost temporarily when Orich left was another guy, at least on the defensive side of the ball, whose recruiting footprint would expand out into the Midwest. Well, hey, that's just exactly what we picked up, Dallas.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, you look at, again, like you said, the recruiting thing, the guy's been a recruiting coordinator many, many, many years. Again, a bunch of time spent in the Midwest, South Dakota and Northern Illinois, both obviously in the Midwest, had a bunch of success at both of those places. You look at his postseason experience, again, I mentioned NIU, won the MAC championship in 2021, and they went to a bowl game. South Dakota State, he was there for what is that, 8 playoff games? Like, the guy has been a winner in just about everywhere he's gone, except for really Vanderbilt. But that's also that's Vanderbilt. That's it is what it is. It's one of the worst places to possibly go for football. It just is. And I'm sorry for the 4 Vanderbilt fans that are ever going to hear this, but Vanderbilt has made 9 bowl games in their existence, which starts in 1890. Vanderbilt is not known for football. Brian, did you know that Vanderbilt was a national champion, actually? Back in the 1920s, when they played in the SoCon, which is technically FCS now, Vanderbilt was a national title winner over 100 years ago. Since then, they have made just a handful of bowl games that realistically were James Franklin, who is now coaching at Penn State, Derek Mason, who that ended really poorly. He's now at Middle Tennessee State, just started this year. When you look at why would a guy leave a SEC job for a FCS coordinator job? I mean, the writing's on the wall. Vanderbilt's gone 9-27 under their current coach, Clark Lee. They went 2-10 in 2021, 2-10 in 2023. They did have a 5-7 year in 2022, but they've been dead last in the SEC East for the entire time the guy's been there. So everybody's going to get fired there eventually. This screams to me of a guy who's, hey, looking for the best job he can to find some stability. This is a pretty good place to land. Rob Orich obviously did a phenomenal job, and his coaching career is on the way up. He's now going to go coach with Sean Lewis at San Diego State, and there's an upward trajectory there. I don't know that there's an upward trajectory with Vanderbilt football anymore, so you come back to Eck. Obviously, people believe in Eck if they're willing to leave position jobs in the Power 5 to come be a coordinator in a lower level of football. But I'm thrilled about this, Brian. I couldn't couldn't be more excited, I don't think.
Well, and you can understand a reason a guy might leave a place like Vanderbilt when Steve Kurtz in the comment section lets us know Vanderbilt football is in the shadow of his daughter attending grad school there. So how is the football team supposed to get oxygen? By the way, Steve, thank you. So the thing I wanted to add too is in the research we did for the show, look, if you were confident with the staff Eck put together when he first came over to Idaho, which, hey, Idaho's made the playoffs twice, you should. Dan Jackson was one of the guys that Eck had talked with, well, based off what we were told. Jackson was a guy who Eck had talked with about potentially being defensive coordinator in year one. So, hey, Eck obviously went with Orich. We love the returns we got out of Orich, but this is a guy who Eck had been talking to earlier, so which makes sense. They have a ton of familiarity working together, but that just goes to show me this is a guy who's always been on the radar in the first place. So, yeah, I guess, I mean, if this is a Tubbs of the club Supreme Court adjudication on the hire, I'm stoked as hell. I think there's no reason to be anything other than stoked as hell. To reiterate what you said, if Idaho has built itself up to becoming the type of place that a guy like Dan Jackson will go to off of Vanderbilt, then, hey, Idaho is going to be fine replacing coaches. The program's been rehabbed. It's now a magnet for people who are either changing direction in their career or trying to move up in their career, whatever.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Brian. The one other thing I wanted to mention, I said it, he's had some special teams coordinating experience. Again, Thomas Ford gone, unfortunately. The Vandal special teams hopefully won't take a hit. We don't know who's going to be coaching special teams this go around. I can't imagine that Dan Jackson would be the defensive coordinator and the special teams coordinator. But when he was coordinating special teams at SDSU in 2019, they led the FCS in punt return defense and were among the top 25 in the FCS in five different special teams categories. So the guy has succeeded at not just coaching defense, succeeded with special teams too. So just honestly, really a great guy to have on the roster, the roster of coaches. When we don't know yet who's going to be coaching special teams, obviously I cannot imagine he's going to coordinate them both. But
well, and he's linebackers coach too. So
So it's probably not going to happen. But honestly, it's nice to have just extra people that are in doing special teams, because again, it's not the NFL. Guys aren't special teams coordinators as their title and their only task. Special teams is always a tack on to something else. Again, Thomas Ford, running backs and special teams. Just nice to have extra guys in the building that have done it, know how important it is.
Montana, Bobby Hauk, and special teams coordinator. So yeah, you're right. That's how the FCS works.
Travis Thompson, any word on Ford's replacement? Not yet at the moment. I think there's been a little bit of rumbling in the Only Tubs Discord, I believe, Brian, but nothing.
I haven't posted that one yet.
Oh, fair enough. There we go. So that was actually only between the Martin, Dallas, and Brian private chat. So
you'll get there.
So Duffer's Tavern jumping in. Let's just hire Nick Saban as special teams coach. I love that idea.
With retreads.
Yeah. I don't have any interest in bringing Pete Carroll on staff, unfortunately, but Nick Saban, yeah, we could clear some room.
So with that, Dallas, anything else you want to go over coaching staff-wise before we talk about our transfers?
I don't think so, Brian. I do want to quickly just mention, because this is not really transfer news and there's not really a great place to just kind of shoehorn it in here. For anybody that enjoyed watching Hayden Hatton in his time as a Vandal, Hayden Hatton is playing in the, 2024 Caribe Royal? I have no idea how that's pronounced. The Orlando Hula Bowl is what it's what I typically have known it as. He's playing in the Hula Bowl Saturday, January 13th at 9 a.m. Pacific. Games on CBS Sports Network. It is going to be your final time to watch Hayden Hatton play quote unquote college football. We'll give you a little recap of it next week's show. But if you're interested in seeing Hayden Hatton one more time before he's moved on to his pro career, 9 a.m. Pacific, CBS Sports Network this Saturday.
But before we talk transfers, and we're talking about transfers out of the program, we got to talk about something that better never transfer out of your cabinet, which is Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. two options, guys. You can't go wrong with either. You get the entry level Snake River Stampede, $25.95 at Idaho liquor stores for a fifth, $45.95 at Handle. The only size I buy. That's a double barrel finish, a first little bourbon, then Oloroso sherry casks. If you're celebrating something like a new defensive coordinator, you're stoked about, maybe you crack open the Snake River Stampede 1915 small batch edition, which that's a double barrel finish too. First full bourbon, then ex Canadian rye whiskey casks. You can't go wrong with either. Tubbs of the Club is asking me, hey, what am I drinking for the DC hire? Oh, that's a small batch hire. No question. That's a small batch hire. So look, you can't go wrong with either. Give Snake River a shot.
With that said, thank you, Brian. And thank you, SRS. Guys, we have some transfers into the program. We're not going to discuss that yet because we're just, honestly, we're not sure if there's going to be any last that trickle in there. Again, we had a running back transfer into the program just a couple hours before this show is being recorded. So we are going to hit the transfers in on our next show just to make sure that we've covered everything completely because, again, we were going to do the show last night until the fabled windstorm 2024 that didn't really end up doing a ton just in case it was going to knock any power lines down or make things difficult for the show. We delayed it a day and then, hey, look, transfer news happened. So we're going to give transfers in one more week, transfers out. Brian, our update from the last show, we're going to start with the least painful one first. Tigana Cisse ended up transferring out, ended up landing at FBS Ohio. Not something I expected. Good for him. Glad to see him land in the G5. But honestly, Brian, with how he just wasn't able to stay on the field here for the Vandals, didn't expect him being able to move up to the G5.
I don't have anything to add to that. I feel the same way. Hey, good luck for Tigana. But he wasn't a standout Big Sky lineman. So I was shocked he moved up, but hey, everyone's looking for depth. Everyone's going to, Ohio taking a gamble on an Idaho guy who, started. Not the most shocking thing I've seen. Look, we also know there's not that much difference between the MAC and the Big Sky, at least the top of the Big Sky and most of the MAC. So I don't know. I don't have much else to add other than good luck.
Fair enough. Then we're going to, again, we're just peeling the Band-Aid off. Next one, again, everybody I think knew because we talked about it on the last show. Giovanni McCoy transferred out. Jack Lane, expected incumbent starter for the Vandals. Giovanni McCoy landing at Oregon State, Brian. Any immediate thoughts to power 4-5, G5-6 Oregon State?
I think he, if you follow Idaho transfers out of the program very much, and look, full disclosure, I don't. I appreciate their time here, but once they're gone, to me, they're gone. But, Giovanni McCoy, I think, is going to be an interesting story to follow. Kind of like I think Clifton McDowell transferring out of Montana to Nebraska is going to be an interesting story to follow because, Dallas, you might be able to give me the name, but what, like 2 weeks after McCoy or a week after McCoy announced he's going to Oregon State picks up a former four-star quarterback recruit from Missouri. Our crack research team can look that up, which is just to say there's no prayer McCoy isn't transferring into a quarterback competition.
Gabari Johnson.
Okay. Gabari Johnson from Missouri, a guy who didn't start in Missouri, but he was like, what, 4 or 5 star. He was a blue chip ish type of recruit. He's the kind of recruit who, if he transfers into the Big Sky, everyone is first incredibly stoked. Then second saying, why in God's name did you come here? But I guess to me, McCoy is going to be an all-time is the grass actually greener guy to watch that story. I wish him the best of luck. But if you look at the Big Sky quarterbacks who've transferred out in the last couple of years, transfer portal wise, the guys might be, I hope they're transferring for a reason other than hoping to play. Because you look at RJ Martinez, who started at Northern Arizona as a freshman. He transfers to Baylor after playing for 2 years at NAU. He threw 24 passes, 18 of which came in one game when he was, I'm assuming a dude was injured. But otherwise, hey, RJ Martinez traded being a potential 4-year career starter who might set records at NAU to not play at Baylor. I hope that's not the case for Giovanni, but I mean, he's walking into a big, big competition.
I mean, and that's the thing, I've seen people get really up in arms when kids transfer out, and I don't have the energy to be upset at people that are leaving. Duffer's Tavern in the comment section: difference between Idaho fans wishing Vonnie good luck on Twitter compared to Montana fans ripping Clifton McDowell, saying it was a silly choice to transfer, was staggering. Again, and Idaho has for the most part done a really good job about like being respectful to kids. Like, come on, in the end, what does it really matter to us if Vonnie plays here for 4 years or he plays here for one? Like, yeah, okay, we miss out on the Vonnie experience, but didn't really affect me. Anyways, Brian, what I'm rambling to get at here is there are so many stories of, again, Bronson Barron leaving Weber State and throwing two passes this year for Western Kentucky in a year that they played five different quarterbacks, technically three different. They played Barron, a handful of quarterbacks.
Barron's another example of a guy who could have been a four-year starter who transfers out to not play. Giovanni McCoy certainly is theoretically there. We of course don't know the result of his, but back to you.
But yeah, this is the risk these guys are taking. You know, if you want a place that's going to give you more exposure, get a better chance to go on and play pro football, hey, more power to you. As Nate Meek says, it doesn't make any sense to be mad about the transfers. Bye.
That's where I am.
That I'm typically in that same thing, Andy Kaus as well. Next man up. I appreciate him coming to my town for a year or two. The reason I'm bringing all of this up, guys, is because we are now going to rip the Band-Aid off to get to the worst fucking one of them all. This we have not talked about. So if you only really follow Vandal football by going to games, following govandals.com and listening to us, you're going to want to sit down for this. X-Ree Alexander declared for the transfer portal shortly after Rob Orich left, and ended up immediately getting a whole bunch of big time offers. For anybody that remembers the saga of bringing X-Ree to Idaho, he was very heavily looking at UW, and then looked like Thomas Ford was able to pull magic and bring him in. Well, now Thomas Ford and Rob Orich are both gone. X-Ree goes to the transfer portal, immediately looks like, hey, Washington's up there. Nebraska was up there for a while. He ends up landing at UCF, which, again, Power 4, Big 12 team. That, to me, is the one that hurts the most because we've talked about it all year long. X-Ree Alexander looks like he's a future defensive player of the year in the Big Sky, probably a first-teamer in the Big Sky very next season. Travis Thompson in the comment section, X hurts like Moala. Travis, I'd go even one further. This one hurts a lot more than Moala because we knew Moala had an expiration date. X's expiration date is quite a ways away. Pretty tough for this one, Brian.
Yeah, I think co-signed everything you said. Only thing I want to add with X-Ree leaving is I heard this story multiple times prior to earlier in the season, in the middle of the season, later in the season. Any person we talked to who attended a practice would say at the end of practice, X-Ree and Rob Orich spent extra time working together. So I think if there was a chance for Idaho to keep X-Ree, they just wouldn't need to keep Rob Orich, and didn't happen. Look, people leave programs. Relatively speaking, Idaho losing just two of our younger defensive guys, I think it's weird to say it this way. It's a relative win. It isn't a win that we lost X-Ree, but the fact that we kept a lot of the young guys is what I'm paying attention to. I wish X-Ree the best again, just like you, but I don't have a ton more to add other than I know X-Ree is going to get paid. There's no way he's going to, a Power 4 school and not having some NIL money. I mean, if Armani Arnold got $150,000, then you expect X-Ree at minimum equaled that. I mean, I don't have any info on this other than to say I expect he got more than what Armani Arnold got. And otherwise, I'm just like Nate Mink is once guys leave, it's worth acknowledging where they landed. But from then on, I'm just kind of done with it. So I don't have much else to add other than I wish X the best.
Yeah, the same. Wish him the best. It's a bummer that we only saw him here for 1 year. Was really hoping that was going to go a lot longer because, again, I think we were all already looking at it as this guy's going to be one of the best Vandal defenders of all time. And unfortunately, when he's playing on Sunday in 2 or 3 years, we'll all have that. Hey, that was cool. He got to spend that 1 year just being maybe the best linebacker on the squad as a true freshman. That cool memory, but hey, good luck. You're not a Vandal anymore. It is what it is. I'm not going to get upset about it.
Some of the Big Sky track record for like defensive guys transferring out is better than the quarterbacks. The quarterbacks transferring out record is a catastrophe. And that dates going back to just when the portal initially existed. Guys like, hey, Gage Gubrud transferred out. And Gubrud was different. He only got the medical redshirt because Eastern made the championship that year. Mm-hmm. Transfers to WSU, doesn't
win a starting job. He got hurt in training camp at Wazoo and didn't get that job.
Exactly. But hey, he didn't play. Kevin Thompson transfers from Sac State to UW. He doesn't play. We already covered Bronson Barron. We already covered RJ Martinez. I honestly don't know like a good story of a Big Sky quarterback leaving other than Jake Constantine just getting out of the conference. But Constantine goes to Rice after going to WSU, doesn't play. That's how it is for quarterbacks. But defensive guys do get reps. You reference Mawala. You know, he was an impact player at Georgia Tech. Kamari Bailey at least got on the field at Fresno State. So track record is better for defensive guys. But again, once a guy transfers, I just kind of move on immediately. I don't know a healthier way to go about this other than to say, look, well, they're Vandals, I'm all in. And when they're not, I'm not.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really all you can do, especially in this era of college football. Look, I don't want to get into debates about college football and the transfer portal and the money and the FBS, FCS. I don't want to get into any of that. I think most people know that I love college football in mostly all of its forms. Look, the only way to stay sane about this, guys, is to just say, hey, if they're not on the team, I don't care. And it seems like most of the comment section is in agreement. Burl Trout, that's life in the Big Sky. Nate Meek just saying, yep. Like, this is just this is the reality we have, and so we just deal with it. But Brian, we have some transfers in that we are, I think, very excited about, especially a handful of them, but we'll talk about that next week. Any other football things you wanted to discuss before we move on?
No, other than to say, like you referenced it, but hey, Vandal fans, we already lived through the shitty part where a bunch of players, where, you know, players leave, and every good team is going to live through this. Montana's living through this now. Yep.
Really quick interruption. Sorry. Patty Frakes in the comment section. Personally, I think teams like Montana and Montana State lost more with transfers out and seniors than Idaho did. So like, this is not just an Idaho exclusive problem. Anyways, Brian, sorry.
Yeah. So I guess the one thing I'd say is if you pay attention to Big Sky media overall, I would completely dismiss what essentially all non-Tubbs or non-Trevin Pixley narratives about Idaho transfers out are going to be, because like we already talked about last episode, we'll talk about it more. The headlines are a lot scarier than to me what the reality is. And other than that, pretty soon we get to talk the good news about new guys coming in. And I think once we do that, a lot of people, if they're anxious at all, some of that's going to go away. Then we get to sit around, wait for little bits of news to trickle in and us to batch it so we can keep leading with football as much as we can.
Hey, that sounds great to me, Brian. You know, I'm always good to talk Vandal football. With that being said, we do have a very big story in the news. Again, the volleyball experience that we are currently living through. Brian, do you have any thoughts or comments on the volleyball situation as it stands?
We're not going to just do like one episode on that. We're going to, as we get more news, talk about it. Full disclosure. Anyone want to help Tubbs get in touch with Debbie Buchanan, please email tubbs@theclub@gmail.com. We've been told by a handful of people who are connected in the volleyball world that would be one of the best things we could do on the show. We don't have a connect. So if you have a connect to Debbie Buchanan, please help Tubbs out. Get a hold of us on Twitter or tubbs@theclub@gmail.com, and we will. The only real news I have is the investigation is not over yet. That we've been told that, look, hey, volleyball practice resumes, or it's resumed as of like Tuesday, and Chris Gonzalez is still there. The university has additional supervision for the practices now, but no one's on leave. To my knowledge, players haven't been contacted yet as part of the investigation, but the investigation's also not yet over. Look, as long as Gonzalez is not on leave, which he's not going to be, As an outsider right now, I don't know anything to do other than be frustrated, but I am happy that the investigation is not being run by the athletic department itself. So we have to see what the ultimate result is and let that due process finish before we decide how we're going to feel about, you know, the entire process. And hey, Mike Colton saying clown show of an investigation. So look, Mike, I don't have a way to disagree with you, but I also don't have a way to 100% say I know how these things typically proceed. So at this point, as an outsider with no one on leave and nothing happening and so much accusations there, I also don't know how to feel different than what you just said, Mike. So cosign, how about that is cosigned with a question mark, and that's it.
Triple cosigned here, because what can you control? Typically, you can kind of control public perception, and Idaho has done a real bad job of that because of the way all of this has gone.
It makes it seem like they just don't give a shit.
That's exactly what it feels like, Brian. It's 100% what it feels like. And that might not be the case, but they haven't attempted to make that feel anything different with the emails that people have received, the public comment that was made. None of this is screaming, we're taking this seriously. And I think that's why this feels like, again, clown show is the best way to describe this. It's unfortunate. It sucks. Again, you put Gonzalez on leave and then maybe all of a sudden it feels a little bit different, but it's just, you know, Burl Trout again in the comment section, media blackout. Like that's what this feels like, is just, we're just going to black everything out and we're going to shut down and we're just going to take it all internally, which is not the way to handle things when it's gone to a national newspaper or a national news group. It just doesn't feel great. Again, we just have to sit and wait. Hopefully everything ends up, again, due process works perfectly and there's a great resolution for all involved, but we just kind of have to sit and wait it out until then.
Now, the only thing I want to add to is if you want pressure to be put on the university, look at your own individual level, send emails. Hey, share our show so more people know. But what Idaho is going to need are people who are in, I'm going to use this term not to reference the place we like to go to, the Corner Club. But look, there is a club, an unofficial club of, hey, like former athletes or people who are tight, who enjoy being able to be invited up into the president's box. We need those people to be willing to be uncomfortable and have uncomfortable conversations because that is how some of the pressure that will matter is going to might actually sway what happens. So we need the kind of people who, not just people who look, we're going to keep talking about it on the show so people know about it, but the kind of people who like that they get to feel comfortable with Terry, those people we need to talk to Terry, the kind of people who like that they feel comfortable with Scott Green. Those are the people who we need sending polite but firm messages that Chris Gonzalez won't be tolerated. Because if those are the people who I think have a chance to potentially sway, but those people also have to be comfortable maybe not feeling like they're in the club anymore. But I can't fix that. Tubbs, the club has done everything we possibly can to not be part of that club. Not that we would be in the first place anyway. We're not former athletes. We're not huge time. We're not big, big time donors. That's what gets you in that club. But those are the people we really do need to be a force.
Yeah. Rest in peace to Bud Ford. But there was a rumor that Bud Ford was one of the people that was like, hey, get Petrino out of here and we're going to pay for it. Like, we need those type of people to step up. If you care to get this situation sorted, if you're listening to this and you are one of those big money donors, if you care enough that you think this is not okay what's happening to these Vandal volleyball women, you it's time to make that stand. Nick Ginter saying the investigation to find BK took less time than the volleyball investigation.
Jesus Christ. Nick, that made me laugh my ass off. Okay. So, hey, we got to talk basketball because we have not talked basketball the entire year, really. And it's time. So,
Brian, are we sure it's time?
It's almost time.
Because what it is time is to talk about a great all-inclusive week-long vacation that's right in your backyard. Hughes River Expedition. They've been Vandal owned and operated since 1976, and they're ready to take you on a vacation of a lifetime. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main salmon river of no return, the Salmon River Canyons, or even the Selway, you can check out special trips like one to see the Perseid meteor shower. You could camp on pristine beaches or pristine bitches. We got Christy Mayer in the house. I know it. I know you're in there. You could run amazing whitewater. You could hike scenic trails. You can spot wildlife. Wildlife's everywhere. You could even soak in beautiful natural hot springs. And guys, like I'm always saying, fish the most remote stretches of river in the entire country. Just bring your clothes. Call in an HRE. You're going to handle the rest. Grab a paddle, catch dinner, and ride the bull all throughout the Gem State. Call them out 406-540-4450. Nate Meek, I did just say beaches and bitches. For anybody that doesn't know, by the way, we have a whole bunch more viewers than I know we had on that basketball show 4 or 5 years ago, however long that's been. That wasn't that long, but it feels like it. Brian infamously once flubbed pristine bitches in the ad read, and so it has just been this long-running joke that I think probably most of our viewers don't even know anymore. But for the 14 of you that listened to the Zach Kloss COVID year basketball shows, we appreciate you.
Well, okay, the reason that has never died is because that year uniquely Dallas, Idaho wins one game. Every post game we did was pissed, angry, and then like we get pristine bitches as incidental comic relief. But look, hey, we got to talk basketball because it's not Zach Kloss time. This is Alex Pribble year one.
This is grilled veggies with maybe a little spice on.
Yeah, and look, to me, one of the most interesting things about this basketball team is like, what's the framework you want to give? Because look, we're through out of conference season. We're into the early conference play right now. Look, hey, Idaho won 10 games last year, and that was a roaring success. Well, hey, Idaho is 7-8 on the year. Yes, there's two sub D1s in there, so that's 5-8 versus D1. But also, two of those losses are to Pac-12 teams. So, hey, just subtract both of those, and Idaho still just one game under 500. If you look at scoring margin in the Big Sky, Idaho is honestly doing a little bit better than you might guess. They have the number 3 scoring margin in the Big Sky, or number 4 scoring margin at -1. There's a bit of an ocean between Eastern at plus 30, Weber State at plus 26, Northern Colorado at plus 15. Then everyone else is underwater with Idaho just at -1 overall. So, hey, this far in the season, it's clear Idaho's not going to win the Big Sky. It's also clear Idaho's not a catastrophe like they've been for so long. And that feels like it's my buzzword for a lot of what we're talking about right now. So to me, it's weird to think of the energy of this team where you know this isn't going to be quite like a Jason Eck year one turnaround. But there's also nothing to be like angry about with Zach Kloss stuff. It's just we're now watching a team that we know was relatively solid and we're going to watch them grow. So what's the narrative framework for me that I have with this team is honestly, hey, what growth do we see? And we have seen quite a bit of growth on the team. If you track from game one against Washington State, that 84-59 loss, through most recent game was hosting St. Thomas out of Minnesota in the Missouri Valley Big Sky Challenge. St. Thomas is a good team. Idaho hung with them the entire game. But this team has clearly took a while to come together because it's a completely new roster. The team isn't like last year's team where it was pretty obvious Isaac Jones was the best player and Devontae Moffitt was the guy who created shots when the offense broke down or when the offense purposely broke down. Idaho doesn't have that guy on this team. There's not a first team all Big Sky player on this roster. So it took a while to me for guys to, one, get comfortable playing D1 minutes because this entire roster of transfers, some D2, so moving up D1 is a competitive step up. Or we also have guys like Tyler Linhart, who transferred from University of Washington. Well, he didn't really play at UW either. So there's a ton of guys on this team who this was their first D1 playing experience. So it took a while for roles to be understood. But big picture, the biggest change, this Idaho is a defense first team. which is weird to think about because Idaho doesn't play like a purposely slow it down style. Pribble still wants to move the ball. But Idaho right now, number three defense in the Big Sky, giving up 67.5 points per game. Number nine offense in the Big Sky, averaging 66.5 points per game. To me, the offense thing is it's a little bit what I talked about. There isn't a single all Big Sky scorer who's going to break down defenses. So the whoever the offensive leader each night, the answer for that question does vary, or who the number two and three scorers are going to be does vary game to game. But hey, Dallas or Martin, I've put you guys both on the shelf for a minute. Actually, I'll go to Martin. Martin, you've watched more than Dallas has so far. So relative to what I just talked about, what's an observation you've had from watching this team?
Like, to speak in Martin terms for a second, like, this team just seems more fun and loose than before. It just seems like they're way more relaxed with, that means it relaxed made their best word, but they just seem, it just is a much more enjoyable product on the court than it has been for the past 3 to 4 years, however long the ZC era went.
Yeah. So when you watch the games, for sure, you see that Pribble coaches the team pretty hard. It's the modern version of hard. You know, he's not Bobby Knight out there, but Pribble's an intense dude. But this team also does look like they're connected with each other in a way the last handful of teams didn't. So, like, last few years, there were most certainly times where you could see frustration between the coaching staff and players boil over. Or, like, hey, the most united we saw last year's team was when there were all the coaches were wearing Nevada clothes after Klaus got fired. That's not the story with this team. This team does completely look like they're a team that's the team likes each other. They like playing for and with each other. They like playing for Coach Pribble.
Yeah, it definitely seems like they're just more, he doesn't yell like how Claus would just yell at the players like when they made mistakes. Like, Pribble's like taking the time to explain, like, hey, that's not how you do it. Like, he takes the time to explain, like, he actually coaches the team, which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah, like, hey, Jason Mayer said, Dallas, I'll throw it to you. Pribble team has bought in lots of rotations in and out, which is to say, hey, Jason Mayer, good point. Because there isn't just like two all Big Sky players, we do have like a 9-ish man rotation. Now, part of that's health, but you are right, Jason Mayer. That is something that's different this year. And Pribble, he's actually coaching the players and they're responding. Well, the team is clearly better right now than they were the first weeks of the season. And the offensive roles are clearly coming together in a way that I'll hit more specifically. But hey, Dallas, you've now been on the shelf for a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm the one who's watched the least amount of this team. I think most people know I'm not as much into basketball as you are. That's certainly your forte. And I have a bunch of other sports that are going on still that I'm watching. And sometimes Vandal basketball just doesn't get in. But in the games that I've seen, Brian, this is everything you're saying is exactly correct. This is a team that actually functions as a team rather than like Zach Kloss's band of rejects. And I hate to say that. It sounds so mean to the guys that have been here before, but watching Zach Kloss just turn the roster over every single year because it was here's the guys that we're going to be able to get to come play for us. They're all D2 players for the most part, other than Isaac Jones, which I still don't know how that happened. Other than, again, watching just solo groups of guys coming in and then standing around on the defensive end without any sort of cohesion. And then again, last year's offense of Devontae Moffitt standing there dribbling the ball for 30 seconds and then either chucking up a prayer or throwing it into Jones in the post. None of that has happened in the games that I've watched. It has been a very cohesive unit. There's actual rotation. They play team defense, which I didn't realize was actually something that was allowed in the Big Sky. After I've watched Zach Kloss for so long, I just didn't expect, you can rotate off of your guy. I thought that was like coded in the rule book or something. It's very refreshing to see. This is unfortunately a long rebuild. Like you said, Brian, there's nobody on this team that's screaming out as an all Big Sky guy. Hopefully, again, development and growth. Some of these guys do turn into that, or again, this program just continues to make steps, but it has felt to me in the games I've seen, Brian, that Pribble is working with what he has, which isn't much because the cupboard was left very bare for him. So it's not an X style situation where he's coming in and hey, there's a bunch of good talent here. They just weren't coached well. It's hey, the talent that was here wasn't coached particularly well. again, the rotating door of for years and years. It's just not one of those things you're going to see a quick turnaround, but the basketball I have watched has been so much more fun to watch than it was before. It was painful. As Patty Frake says in the comments, it's actually a team and not a bunch of random guys that came to Idaho because no one else would give them a scholarship. That's what it looks like out there. It's an actual team of players trying to play.
But I had to hit a little bit now, because we've talked about the contrast. I want to talk about what they are. And not what they're not. So defensively, Dallas, you hit it. Like this team, significantly much more sophisticated team defense rotations and strategies. The team mixes up what defenses they play quite a bit, shifting, rotating from man to zone. One feature that if you listen to the announcers, they will bring it up. It's pretty common for Idaho to run sections of play where they lead with a 3-2 zone. But when the ball gets into the high post, the zone goes away and it becomes a man defense, which that actually does seem to cause some trouble for some teams or teams that can't beat Idaho penetration wise, which is, again, that's been fun to watch. Idaho's biggest issue defensively is giving up some open threes. Now you can see, like, reliably some of those threes come from penetration that doesn't actually go orient towards the key. It's towards the hoop, but it is from the wing. So like from left wing going left, which the reason that leaves an open three is because the help defense is then one pass away from a wide open three, the solution to that is just don't get beat on defense. There isn't much to fix there. But otherwise, defensively, they play hard. They mix it up. That part makes it fun. Their rebounding has been significantly improved since Pribble has been starting three bigs. That actually leads to one of the big questions. Like the three bigs starting, two bigs have been starting essentially the whole season, Julius Mims and Kyson Rose. The third big has kind of rotated between Taryn Frank and then Tyler Linehart, which what Pribble's going to do long-term with Linehart and Taryn Frank about who should start and who should not start. I think that's actually going to be kind of a season-defining question, because Tyler Linehart transfer from University of Washington. Early in the season, he looked lost, but about the last six or seven games, he'd been a reliable 10-ish points off the bench until he started against St. Thomas. The reason I say it's a question is because Linehart is easily the most skilled post scorer on this Idaho team. He has good footwork. He has nice touch around the hoop. But when he was moved to the starting lineup, especially in the second half against St. Thomas, he actually didn't really get any post touches. But when he's first guy off the bench, he was getting quite a bit of dedicated post touches. So, hey, that's a real question for the Idaho team. But I want to circle back. Part of why I talked about the roles this team taking a while to develop, and that whoever the leading scorer, also the number two and three scorer, that's a real question each night. And one of the things that's magnetizing about watching this team is if you look at the points per game for Idaho, there are seven guys on Idaho averaging between 11.9 points a game. That's Quinn Denker, who leads the team, which now part of that's buttressed off the D2 games. But hey, Quinn Denker on paper right now, he leads the team scoring 11.9. Then we have Julius Mims at 11, D'Angelo Minnis, starting point guard, at 10.5. Tyler Morris, okay, so I should say six, because Tyler Morris is out with a broken ankle. He might be back by the end of the year. He's at 10.5. So let me take that back. Six guys averaging between 11.9 points a game and 7 points a game, with Linehart, Taryn Frank, and Kyson Rose all averaging less than eight, more than 7 points per game. So where the scoring output comes varies radically with this team. And exactly how the team gets those points varies, because there isn't a single guy who's great at breaking defenses down off the dribble. But there are quite a few guys who will attempt to post. Actually, Quinn Denker, shooting guard, who played point guard when D'Angelo Minnis was hurt, he likes to back guys down into the post too. So the team offensively has a little old school / new school at the same time. A lot of guys who are solid shooters, no lights out shooter on this team. So the team can absolutely shoot threes. Julius Mims, one of the more fun guys to see. He's a transfer from North Idaho College, 6'9". He was a high jumper in high school. He's definitely a rim protector. He definitely is able. He's a great rim runner, scores opportunistically, but he also can catch and shoot threes okay. So what you get out of this team in a good sense, guys, is it's kind of all over the place when you watch the team. Which, circling back to what I bring up early, is like, hey, we know the team's not going to win the league. We know but we know they're not awful. So like, hey, what brings you to watching the game other than the fact that these are Vandals? What brings me in is legitimate, positive unpredictability.
I just want to throw it to the comment section very quickly. Not related. Idaho will be number one in the league next year when Case Wynot changes his commitment to UI. Wink, wink, for those of us that might be in the comment section.
Yeah, it's not happening.
It's not happening, no. Oh, you would never choose Idaho over Utah State. So absolutely the right move. But no, Brian, this is, again, this is so much different than anybody that's been soured on Vandal basketball over the last handful of years. Honestly, I mean, going back to the Verlin days, just the same style of basketball being played, honestly, the last, 15 years at Idaho. It's different. It's refreshing. It is one of those things that I'm very much looking forward to, the fact that we are firmly into the conference season, which, again, is college football's over now. My personal time frees up a little bit at the new year every year. I'm very excited to watch more of this team because, again, this is just it's not the Isaac Jones and Devontae Moffitt show where the two of them combined for almost 40 points a game and like 85% of the shot selection. It's not that this year. It's nice to see. And Andy Kao saying, all the bigs can hit the three. You go through, look at the stats. Just about everybody's shooting fairly well from three. It's not world beating. It's not the Golden State Warriors, but it's better than what we've seen of guys just hucking up balls. And I mean, Devontae Moffitt shot 26% from three last year and chucked up way more than he ever should have.
Well, you also have a ton more movement on the offensive side. So it's not like when you were referencing last year, the team gets points within the flow of its half court offense. Now, Lagarde brought up the relative weakness of this team is quite obviously scoring the ball. You know, they're the number nine scoring team in the Big Sky. But I see that and I don't chalk that up to like some deficiency. I chalk it up to, hey, the team took a while to figure out what everyone's roles were going to be. And look, this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, so I apologize. I don't know how to say it otherwise. This is a bunch of okay players. Like, it's a bunch of solid players who all play hard. They all stick within their roles. That makes it fun. But because it's a bunch of solid players, the team doesn't yet have the difference maker who's, you know, or the difference makers needed to compete for a Big Sky championship. But this team certainly will spoil some teams who are trying to make a run at Eastern and Weber State. This is certainly a team that come Boise, Idaho men will finally have a chance to pick up a win in Boise with the de facto home court advantage. As the team wins more games and as we exit football season, exit the breaks, ICCU is going to become a much better home court advantage, which, hey, starting with this Saturday against Eastern Washington, tip-offs at 4 p.m. The women's game tips off. Martin, you can tell me that because it's a doubleheader.
1 p.m.
Yeah, women's game against Eastern tips off in Moscow at 1 p.m. Men's game tips off theoretically at 4, but of course, hey, it depends when the women's game ends. We know the crowds are going to be better, but the biggest takeaway I have from this team is, look, sit and watch them grow. Sit and watch. It's weird to say that I'm just relaxed watching Vandal basketball, and I am. It's a team that's very easy to root for. There are a couple guys on this team who, if they stay, it's worth tracking their development. The big name for me is Tyler Linehart, because that guy has, for a Big Sky post, has some absolutely great footwork. And he's a solid three-point shooter. He just needs to be, he's an inside-out player. But he's already taken a developmental step within the scope of this season itself. So he's a guy to watch for whether he can take another step to move from averaging, you know, around that 8-ish points. He's averaging about 10-ish off the bench the last, you know, 6 games. Can he move next year from averaging 10 to averaging around 15, 16, become a real difference maker? I don't know. But that's part of what is interesting to me about watching this team is, There's a handful of seniors like, hey, D'Angelo Menace is just going to be here for a year. So you're here to watch his ride while he's here. But there are some younger guys who are going to be solid pieces who can absolutely be contributor. They might not be able to be a leading scorer on a team that wins the Big Sky, but they are certainly guys who can be meaningful contributors on a team competing to win the Big Sky. Right now, this year is about development. Sit back and enjoy.
Yeah, Brian, I just wanted to reemphasize that D'Angelo Menace is the only senior on this roster. Theoretically, every other player could come back next year. It's not likely. I would assume that you will see some guys leave. Some guys will decide to stay. You know, a guy like Taryn Frank that I was shocked stuck around last year, which, awesome. Thank you, Taryn, by the way, for staying and just committing to the school. It's super cool to see that when, again, your coaching staff leaves. But it feels this is just a different era of basketball, Brian. It feels like there are things now to look at and say, hey, Trayvon Blasingame came over from FDU after, you know, they had their incredible run in the tournament last year. That's cool and all, but like, oh yeah, he's a sophomore. Hey, he might be here for more than a year, which we haven't really been able to say about young players in Vandal hoops for quite a while. So a team that is definitely going to be able to grow over the next couple of years. And like you said, maybe none of these guys are all Big Sky guys in the future, but this team should continue to grow and improve. And we should see that. I mean, we've seen it throughout the season, much less every year restarting from scratch year in and year out. The last one thing I wanted to say is Patty Frakes again in the comment section, just pointing out, hey, Pribble was also not set up very well for success this year because Kloss was fired at the end of his contract and coached that entire year as a lame duck coach. No freshman wants to come to a school with a lame duck head coach. So we've already kind of shot Pribble in the foot as things started out. And here, Brian, I think it's safe to say Pribble probably gets more wins than Zach Kloss did in just his first year. And that, like, it's comforting to see growth out of Vandal basketball rather than circling the drain, doing the same thing over and over.
No, I mean, finishing right around 500 in Big Sky play is absolutely on the table for the first time in half a decade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hey, and that's one of the good, that is, I think that as long as you're not obsessing over like a couple places on the internet, most Vandals I've talked to, they're in the right headspace for how they should understand this basketball season, which is, we've got competence here. That's something we get to experience. We're just going to enjoy seeing that part this year. We know that's going to bring some wins, but you know, I mean, you brought it up, I want to bring it up in a different way. So, hey, Cody Hawkins in football won 3 games, but was considered a pretty big success at Idaho State because of what he was rehabbing. Well, that's essentially the level of rehab that Pribble is dealing with. It's a Cody Hawkins, Idaho State level. This isn't, you know, when Jason Eck picked up at Idaho, he already had a lot of the pieces. He just needed to make the pieces work. That wasn't the case with basketball, but you can already tell this team after this year is going to be much more set to, with whatever roster spots they have next year, they're going to be a place that you can see an impact transfer who, if they can add, you know, a guy who's not a solid shooter, but a great shooter, or if they can add a guy who's not solid off the dribble, but great off the dribble. Those are the missing pieces offensively, I think, that Pribble really needs to have this team take that next step and to improve offensively. That's because that's the area that Idaho is relatively lacking in. But it's, again, I don't think this isn't a thing where I'm sitting and watching and wondering why in God's name is the scheme, you know, doing this. It's, look, the team's maximizing the talent to the extent they can right now. But this is going to be a team where you're going to have some good moments if you stick around. I'm probably outed myself. Tyler Linehart or Linhart, however you say his name. I think it's Linhart. Tyler Linhart's he's my favorite individual player on this team to watch. But Julius Mims, like Captain 58 said earlier, he gets a couple dunks each game. The pick and pop, or like, you know, the put back dunk game for Idaho. That's absolutely real. And like Duffer's Tavern saying, I can't wait until we play Idaho State in basketball and beat them. That'll be a fun day on Twitter. Idaho hasn't beaten Idaho State for what, like 3 years. So no, like that, I guess that's the other thing to watch is what streaks is Pribble able to beat? Idaho State absolutely is. I'm calling now. That will happen this year.
Quick correction from the Tubs of the Club. Quick correction. Good work, Dallas. Great start here. Correction from the stats department on the pronunciation of Tyler Linhart, according to the govandals.com website.
Linhart. Okay. But so, hey, Dallas, we've talked about the team pretty well. Look, now, side note, Eastern's probably going to win the Big Sky. The Big Sky is a two-team race, Eastern and Weber State. Weber State has Dylan Jones, who's climbing up the potential NBA draft boards with his play. Then Eastern, they're a different version of Idaho. They have like around five guys averaging 10-ish points a game, but they're the biggest, most athletic team in the Big Sky. They're one of the tallest teams in the nation. Those are the two teams that are going to win the Big Sky, one of those two. So, look, for Idaho to pick up a win against Eastern, that would for sure be an upset. But I'm going to be there. You and I were the same page last year, Dallas, of not buying tickets on purpose. That's not where I am anymore. I'm going to buy tickets. I'm going to get my ass to ICCU for the game. I don't have anything else to add other than get on board, support the team. It's fun. And then other players that I think it's worth keeping an eye on for this season is Quinn Denker. He's a solid two guard who plays backup point guard as needed. D'Angelo Minnis seems kind of like he's starting point guard. He's about 5'9". And by the way, 5'9" might be generous. I met the guy at a tailgate and super nice dude. Maybe that's the thing I forgot to bring up. Every guy I've met on this team is unbelievably easy to root for. So, it's probably why I'm all on board. But D'Angelo Minnis kind of feels like the offensive heart of this Vandal team. And as was brought up earlier in the comment section, Idaho's had some injury issues as of late. Minnis missed a little bit of time. Tyler Morris, who would be a starter, broke his ankle in the second game of the season, although his rehab apparently is on track that he might be able to still play by the end of this season. Taryn Frank missed some time as well. But anyway, pay attention to Minnis. And then Christian Gonzalez, backup point guard. He initially committed to Sacramento State, then decommitted, came to Idaho. He, of all the guys on the team right now, he's the guy who in the future looks like he's going to be the best at breaking people down off the dribble. He's just going through the freshman growing pains of, at times he looks very solid off the dribble, and at sometimes he looks like a true freshman playing important minutes.
Well, and it's also not a great time to be named Chris Gonzalez and be at the University of Idaho. So, give him that too. Sorry, really stupid joke.
It's cool. Dallas, anything else you want to add?
Yes, actually, Brian. If you have just finished listening to this episode and you are stunned that Idaho hired Dan Jackson as their defensive coordinator, let me tell you about patreon.com/tubsoftheclub, because our patrons knew about this weeks ago, guys. We don't break a lot of news anymore because we don't have the time in the day. We don't run the website anymore. We don't have a lot of places to put it. So what did we do? We put it in the Discord. So most of the folks that were commenting in the YouTube thread, actually, I recognize them from our Discord. A lot of people knew about Dan Jackson before it became official news today. So if you want to keep up on Vandal Sports and have some of that inside information, man, we've been posting a bunch of it in Discord recently. Even on the show, I kind of alluded to the fact that we might know who the next running backs coach is, and it hasn't been posted to our Discord yet because it's not solid enough for us to say it. But rest assured, it's probably going to be in our Discord before it's on Go Vandals or before it's out online in the public. So if you're interested, it's less than a cup of coffee a month. Patreon.com/tubsoftheclub. #onlytubs, where you can see Martin in all his hotness. Come check it out.
Okay, guys. And look, hey, like Jason Mayer's echo, Discord, cheaper than a cup of coffee. If you're generous, it does not need to be cheaper than a cup of coffee. You are more than welcome to make it to jump up above that 250 range.
I also forgot to mention Patty's previews. Patrick Frakes, recruit breakdowns on there as well. Patty has been going down, breaking down all of the recruiting classes, the recruiting words.
Professional recruiting breakdowns for the recruiting signing day classes.
Broken down by position group was what I was trying to get out of my mouth, and it just fumbled out. So thank you, Martin, for jumping in there. Guys, I think we're in range. It's time. Go Vandals.
Go Vandals.
Go Vandals.